This is an eavesdropping conversation. I'm Juliet Fraser, and today I'm talking to Eliza McCarthy. Welcome, Eliza.
Thank you very much for having me, Juliet.
My pleasure. I'm wondering if you can begin by giving our listeners a sense of who you are. How would you describe yourself as an artist?
I'm a pianist, so I play the piano, and I'm interested in working with lots of different people. I like to get other people to write music for me to play, and I like to play kind of weird music and music which challenges me, and I think maybe I'm drawn to music of extremes, so lots of very long, slow music, or very fast and loud, but definitely music that pushes me physically. I'm really interested in the physicality of playing. That, I think, initially led me to experiment a lot with working on the inside of the piano and kind of explore all four corners of the piano, of the instrument itself. And what else? I'm picky. I'm also very picky.
I think that's a really good quality. Yeah, so pianist, it sounds like attracted to the weird things and to extremes as well. And there's another part of your practice, which is to do with mindfulness. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, a few years ago, I started teaching mindfulness meditation, mainly to performers and musicians and artists and actors. And it was really a development of my own practice as a meditator. I had my own contemplative practice and teaching it to as mindfulness meditation, which is secular, has been really valuable in my own learning of it, my own experience of mindfulness meditation, and is really kind of brings the whole question of our experience as performers and our experience of just living and living as players, as musicians, as creative people, what that means and how to enjoy it more.
Do you think that that journey of digging more and more into mindfulness has had an effect on your creative choices? I mean, I can only imagine that it has a big effect on how you work as a performer, but thinking about sort of the people that you collaborate with or the sort of material that you're drawn to, do you think that's changed or is changing?
Yeah, I suppose I want to make sure that if I'm going to spend time with a piece of music, that I'm going to enjoy it. I think as you come up as a player, you know, you kind of have to say yes to so many things. You have to say yes to whatever comes up, pay the rent, of course. But when I said I was picky, I think that's what I meant, is that I want to sit with a piece of music that I know that some aspect of it is going to teach me something about the way that I work or about myself, so challenges me in some ways, but also that sounds good. I want to enjoy the sounds that I'm making.
Mm. And what does weird mean to you? That's probably an impossible question, but what might the qualities of something be that makes you go, yeah, that's weird in a really good way? Or is it about sort of sitting outside of tradition somehow? Do you have a sense of what that means to you?
I guess now nothing really sounds weird to me anymore. But so when I say weird, I think maybe it's more to do with what other people's perception of weird might be. So in a way, I'm saying it as preparation for what you might hear. But probably initially, I was drawn to weird sounds because I was brought up in such a traditional route. I went down such a traditional route growing up and listening to and playing the same repertoire year on end, year in, year out. So weird would mean something that's incongruous to what, you know, you might expect as a pianist trying to work towards this competition or that competition or this concert hall or towards working with that orchestra. So it was sound that kind of went against those expectations. And again, sort of the inside of the piano was my first opening into that, because I was like, well, we're sitting in front of these keys all day long. What's actually happening in there, and what kind of sound can I make from there? So it was sort of like getting into the blood and guts of my like life partner. And that really excited me.
Yeah, that's lovely. I love the idea of the piano as a partner as well. I think I feel like I wrestle a bit more with my partner, and it's complicated because it's inside me. But yeah, it is a strange partnership, an unholy alliance. So you mentioned a bit your background or your early years in music. I'm wondering what that looked like. When did music enter your life, and where did that come from? What was the environment like that had music in it?
Really from my parents' love of music. Neither of them played. My dad played the flute a little bit in college, but they listened to so much music. We always had records on at home. They took me out to concerts. And one day my mom came home and said, do you want to play the piano? And I said, yeah, sure, why not? And that was it. And we found a great teacher. We sort of got involved in this new school that was opening just down the road from us, in just outside of Philadelphia. It was run by a mother-daughter duo who just moved over from Russia. And they kind of took me under their wing, and it was really intense and wonderful. So I sort of became part of their family, and it was great. And kind of pretty much lived at their houses. And then that kind of just gradually led to finding ways of playing the piano more, finding ways of getting into more music. And I eventually moved to England, where I went to a specialist music school. And the rest is history. Then I stayed there until I went to college, and boom, boom, boom.
So we're talking about a very classical training, I'm imagining. So this is technique and repertoire and competitions and this sort of thing?
That's right. Yes. So actually, before I moved to England, I was doing a lot of competitions. And, you know, I was kind of a big fish in that school. Then I came to England, and then I was a tiny little minnow. There was a point, I think I was maybe 13, and I decided I didn't want to do a competition ever again in my life, and that it was not a worthy goal. And that kind of results end game wasn't interesting to me. Plus, I was rebelling and listening to Marilyn Manson and seeing what it'd be like if I decided to be an actor and doing lots of dance. And I didn't want to go down that route, but I didn't know what route I wanted to go down yet, until maybe in my mid-teens or late teens, mid to late teens, I heard some John Cage. And that was my door, my liberation.
That leads me really tidily onto the idea of influences, or I suppose perhaps pivotal musical experiences. So given that collaboration with composers is a big part of what you do and what you seek out, are there people with whom you've had particularly fruitful relationships who have sort of somehow changed your thinking about you and your instrument?
I've recently been collaborating with Donica Dennehy, and he's written me a piano concerto, which was premiered last year. And that's been quite a big turning point, in the sense that, I don't know, I think it gave me a lot of confidence. And I've worked with composers before and commissioned music before, but there was something about the scale of this work which I think initially brought up a lot of old fear of playing a piano concerto, because it's such a trope. And so how do I grapple with this idea of getting on stage and playing a piano concerto with an orchestra? And letting go of that and learning how to get rid of the kind of trauma memory of what that would feel like when I was playing, you know, a lot more classical concertos, and the whole ideas around performing those and the expectations audiences might have of a soloist playing a concerto. So the process of learning it brought a lot of old ideas up that I had to shed, and that was really good for me, gave me a lot of confidence. And also working with a great friend And there's an aspect of working with a composer who you know well. Sometimes they know more about aspects of your playing than you do, or can hear very different things in the way that you play and can draw them out. And so there's a lot more you can discover from those kind of partnerships.
Mm. And what about other artists, people who work in a way that you admire or that you aspire to slightly, or people that you're listening to? I always think it's really, I'm always interested in what other people are listening to at the moment, what's inspiring them.
I mean, I don't really listen to a lot of music that I would play or go to a concert to listen to. Right now, in all honesty, I'm only listening to Harry Styles.
Get out.
You'd be surprised. Come on. Get rid of any preconceived idea. I mean, Harry's House is a fantastic album.
I listened to it once and really enjoyed it. And then I thought, okay, it's great. I can dig into this one. I couldn't do it more than once. It just couldn't stand it.
Wait till the 25th time and you'll hear so much more. But I think a lot more, I mean, this is because this was not out of choice, but I've made peace with it, right? But I think a lot of my inspiration comes from reading and from my mindfulness practice, really, and study and researching, you know, the impact of our life on our mental health and how we can really respond in a much more natural, honest, and open way with the things that happen to us in our lives, to be fluid and flexible, to be able to choose what we engage in and choose how we respond to our experience. And that's really inspiring. I mean, initially, I remember when I was about to go to college, coming across a pianist who had commissioned a new piece of music. And that was really inspiring to me. And I decided then, I was like, oh, I want people to write me music. That's what I want. And that's how I decided to sort of pursue that path. So this is what I wanted rather than focusing on what I didn't want. And that obviously opened so many different avenues and connections and people that I've worked with in the past. I've done a lot of work with actors, doing a lot of physical improvisation, verbal improvisation and improv on the piano. And that was really exciting for me when I was doing it. Yeah, so I think those different avenues have all fed into what I'm doing now.
Hmm. I'm wondering what you might have to say about failure, given that this is our festival topic, experiments in failure. What's your perspective on failure and perhaps the potential of it even within our creative processes?
Well, I've never failed at anything in my life before. So I can't really compute this idea of failure. But what I can imagine, I mean, what is failure? Failure is when you don't reach a desired outcome. So maybe something interesting is just looking at what all the outcomes could be from any given situation. I think a lot of our disappointment comes from expectation. And we're always sort of trying to chase a very specific idea of what a thing is. And if you don't get to that exact outcome, then it's a failure. But a lot of those ideas live in our fantasy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's so many levels to what a desired outcome is. But I think it's possible to look at something from really different perspectives. So, I mean, I'm not sort of an expert in the science of failure and success, but a lot can come out of failure that's much more exciting than reaching the end goal that you perceived would be it. And also there's so much, we're so driven by trying to reach goals that we often miss the experience of reaching it. And I, you know, I've done this time and time again where I'm like, okay, well, after that gig, I'll be able to live again. You know, you're prepping, researching, practicing. And it's like, okay, once that's over, I can take a rest. I can live again. I can see some friends. I can watch some TV, you know, whatever it is that you like chill out with. So we often just miss so much of our lives by trying to reach that goal. So maybe this is more about sort of goal orientation rather than failure. But then, you know, if the desired outcome doesn't happen, then what does that mean for yourself and the time you've spent moving towards it? There's so much we miss. So that's what I think right now.
That's great, Eliza. Thank you. Thanks so much for sharing those thoughts. Yeah, stuff to think about, definitely. Okay, well, I'm wondering if you can give us a bit of a glimpse into what you might be sharing as part of your eavesdropping set. Have you made some decisions about that?
Very, very concrete decisions, yep. No, I've been thinking, yeah, every so often since you asked me to play, something comes up and I go, oh, yes, I'd really like to explore that. And I think at the moment, I might be playing something by Gabriella Smith, some Linda Cat Lynn Smith. And what I know for sure is that I'll be playing a piece by Tanya Koh, who we've commissioned a new piece from, which I'm really excited about. I met her in New York a few months ago where she was premiering a concerto for bubble wrap. And I thought, brilliant. I need to get to know this person. And then when you said that I had the option of commissioning something, she came up quite quickly as someone I wanted to work with.
I didn't realize that. So you just encountered Tony's music before I suggested the name. That's brilliant. What serendipity. How lovely. Yeah, so Tony is our eavesdropping commission of 2024. And that's excellent to hear.
So there'll be that, which will be a great surprise. And then I'm thinking probably to play something by Donika Dennehy. I really think his music should be heard more. And it's not played a lot in England at the moment. So I'm hoping to change that. And I just received in the mail a piece by Cassandra Miller. And I'll probably play that as well.
That sounds lovely. It's not terribly in the spirit of eavesdropping to think about repertoire, so we don't normally announce that sort of thing, but that I'm very happy to hear that list of composers. That sounds like a really nice mix, and many of them people that you have some sort of long-standing connection with, or at least several, because Donika you've worked with, as you said earlier, for a while. Cassandra I know is a good friend of yours. Do you know Linda and Gabriella personally? No, so then you great. It's really nice. Well, I can't wait to hear that stuff. And I'm really delighted that you're on our billing for this season. So thank you. And you'll be performing on Thursday, the 21st of March at Cafe Otto. Thank you so much for chatting with me, Eliza. It's really lovely to hang out with you.
Thank you, Julia. I love being here and with you.
You have been listening to an eavesdropping conversation. Our new jingle was composed for us by Iza Otoya.